and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, we have Anne Deschamps returning. She is the Executive Director for the Mid-Atlantic ADA Center, and you've been on several times before. So, one, welcome back, and two, for anyone who is unfamiliar with the regional ADA centers, can you tell us what the heck they are and what you do?
Well, thank you so much, Laura. It's great to see you again, and I'm happy to be back. The Mid-Atlantic ADA Center, our mission is to provide training and technical assistance on the Americans with Disabilities Act to everybody who is covered by the law. And we happen to be the Mid-Atlantic ADA Center, so we cover Pennsylvania and Delaware and DC and Maryland and Virginia and West Virginia.
And you know what you think, well, who the heck is going to actually need your services? But it is people with disabilities, and we need to discuss that as well, a definition there. But it's people who rent or do business, employ anyone who knows anyone really with a disability.
Yeah, and I'll remind everybody that the Americans with Disabilities Act is a civil rights law that is meant to level the playing field for people with disabilities. So to provide access, to create an inclusive society for people with disabilities, and to help people with disabilities get access to businesses, state and local government services, to employment. So the ADA really affects the majority of people, which is why places like the Mid-Atlantic ADA Center exist. And we're funded by your tax dollars, Laura. We're funded by a federal grant, and the federal government does do good things sometimes. And they fund us to provide technical assistance, to answer questions at our 800-1-800-949-4232. Which you can dial anywhere in the country, and you get connected with the ADA center that serves the area code you are calling from. And we also do in-person and virtual training. So people who don't know anything about the ADA or don't know how the ADA affects them, they know they're covered by the law, but don't know how, that is what we're here for.
Well, you just said they know they're covered by the law. And actually, I would argue that most people don't realize who is covered by the law. And we've discussed this, you know, in the past. And I think everybody is pretty much familiar now with what is a disability. And then in random conversation, I'll find out somebody probably could benefit from these rights that they have.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You're hitting on such a prevalent issue that I've been asked to talk about frequently. The evolution of the term disability, even over our lifetime, has changed. What we thought of as people with disabilities when we were younger might have been people who were blind, people who were deaf, people who used a wheelchair, which are considered people with disabilities. But now, today, disability has come to mean, and we look at it entirely differently, people maybe with significant back issues, people with psychiatric disabilities, people with autism, people with ADHD. Those terms weren't used when we were growing up. They weren't part of the lexicon. And so we've come to, as a society, acknowledge that disability has a lot broader definition than what we thought it did maybe in the 70s and the 80s. According to the Centers for Disease Control, 1 in 4 people in the U.S. has a disability. That's 25%. And 1/3 of those people have more than one disability. It's just that people with cancer, people with psychiatric disabilities, older people don't necessarily identify as having a disability, which is what you were getting at with your comments earlier.
There is an actual definition, though, that,
yes,
that you can apply across the board.
Exactly. And the definition in the Americans with Disabilities Act is a person with a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities. There are also two other prongs to the definition, but the focus here is somebody with a condition or an impairment that substantially limits their ability to perform a major life activity. And the major life activities are what you would think they are, eating, sleeping, walking, talking, lifting, bending. Also, our functions of our systems, like the immune system, the endocrine system, the nervous system, all of those as well. So that's the legal definition. But as I said, I think, when we're looking at disability, we're really not looking at the name of the disability. We're looking at how it affects us.
You didn't include in there education and advancement and employment and leisure. And we're going to be talking a lot about that in just a few minutes because you do have this big conference. We've alluded to that in shows in the past coming up October 15th through the 17th, inclusive hospitality and tourism. And you mentioned the word terminology and definition. And there are some phrases that we use, or you hear them. You can see the air quotes around disability, disability, and then ableism. And do these terms matter?
Yeah, I love your questions because language does matter and words matter. But the question that really comes up is, how do I know how to refer to people? It's kind of like the pronouns. It's like, what does all of this mean? And I'll give you my quick summary because it's easy to remember. First of all, person first is a great rule of thumb. You don't refer to somebody as a blind person or a deaf person, or you don't say things like confined to a wheelchair because they're not confined to a wheelchair. They can get out of the wheelchair. They probably do when they go to bed at night. So somebody who uses a wheelchair, somebody who is blind, somebody who is deaf, person first language, which shows respect for the individual. Now, there's some people in the disability movement who their disability is a central part of their identity. So they like to be known as an autistic person, a blind person, etc. If that is their preference, they will tell you. But my default, and this is just my preference and my default, is person first because it shows respect. Now, the term ableism, that is a term that really just entered our everyday lexicon recently. And it's so interesting. Do you know how it entered our lexicon
No.
really every day? It dates back to, I guess it was 2022 when Fetterman and Oz had the debate in Pennsylvania. Do you remember that? And John Fetterman had just had a stroke, and there were lots of questions on whether he would be able to perform and what he could do, etc. Well, as an accommodation, during the debate, he had captions. He was reading because he could process better by reading as opposed to just hearing alone. So that was a big deal. And writers started writing about how he had to have this accommodation, which is a great thing because it publicized the need. And he performed well and he went on to win, right? So it was a wonderful thing to see somebody, first of all, come back from a medical condition like a stroke and go ahead and win the debate and continue with his life, but he continued with his life with accommodations, which is exactly what this law is all about. It's about including people with disabilities. But then guess what? Fetterman competed just like anybody else, and he happened to win, and he could have competed and lost as well, if that makes sense.
But now the term ableism, it also is a slur.
Yes. Yeah. Ableism, I've been talking about it lately because I've been trying to define it for people to help them understand. Ableism is when we other people with disabilities and we assume that they cannot do th things as a person without a disability could. So it's when we assume that people with disabilities are less than or anybody else. And the problem, Laura, is our society was built without people with disabilities, because we have a long history of shutting people with disabilities out, of institutionalizing them, right? And it's only recently, in the past 30 years, that we've started to include people with disabilities. So guess what? They're trying to be included in a society that was built without them. So we, as people without disabilities, need to learn how to include people with disabilities. And that means we learn how we are exhibiting ableism in our attitudes, in the way we behave, in the workplace, everywhere, because it's just the default mode of how we've been. Now, luckily, we have a term for it now. So I talk a lot about ableism in the workplace and how we can get rid of ableism in the workplace. And a lot of it is all about changing attitudes.
We have to talk about the workplace. I want to definitely discuss remote working, and what COVID actually did for the workforce. But there's something that's been in the news, and that is they are addressing, and this has been on the table for many, many years. It's a hotly contested issue, and that is a subminimum wage for disabled workers under certain circumstances. And can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm glad that this issue is getting publicity, because it's been around a very long time. There's one small part of the National Labor Standards Act that allows some employers to get a waiver from paying certain populations, including people with disabilities, minimum wage. So once the employer gets this waiver, they can pay people with disabilities a sub-minimum wage, which isn't fair. It really isn't. It is like the sweatshops. So a lot of states are getting rid of the sub-minimum wage, and because it isn't fair to people with disabilities, and it isn't allowing them to compete with people with disabilities on an equal level. It isn't allowing them to work in the workplace. And people with disabilities can work at a location for years and years and years and make next to nothing, certainly not a livable wage at all. I mean, minimum wage is barely a livable wage these days. So it is kind of the subminimum wage issue is the last bastion of how exclusive we used to be for excluding people with disabilities and treating them differently.
And when I said that this is hotly contested, it actually is, and that is that includes the community itself, because one, the argument is that it does allow employment at all for some people. And it's treated like a social activity. But
Right.
now, has this ever been weaponized against workers who are trying to compete?
I don't know about that. I think what you see is people who are not aware that people with the most significant disabilities, who frequently are in these sheltered workshops that are doing sub-minimum wage work, they can work in regular workplaces. It's called customized employment, community integrated employment. People can look it up. And so the belief that there's some people who can only do sheltered workshop work is just wrong. And I think change is hard, Laura. So trying, there are a lot of people with disabilities, a lot of parents who want to maintain the status quo. And I understand that, because change is hard. However, as a society, welcome to 2024, where everybody gets a chance to work, and everybody should get a chance to work in the community. And a sheltered workshop is not in the community. It's what it says. It's sheltered. It's away. It's excluding people with disabilities and relegating them to a different. And if they're doing it for social, then socialize. socialize. But it, there's work and there's social, and just like there is for people with disabilities.
And let's clarify, when we talk about sub-minimum wage, we're talking about pennies,
Pennies.
literally change.
Yeah, it's not even like, oh, sub-minimum wage. So they're making, $9 an hour or $8 an hour. No, it's pennies. And if anybody searches sub-minimum wage for people with disabilities, they can get more information and read more, because it is an interesting issue, and it's pretty surprising that there's still employers who have the certificate, the waiver from under the National Labor and Standards Act.
Well, now let's move it to something a little bit more happy then. That COVID and remote working evened the playing field for an awful lot of qualified workers who could not get hired before, had barriers, transportation, etc., to getting to a job.
Yes, and it also educated a lot of employers that a lot of their work could be done by employees with and without disabilities at home. So I think everybody, we all got educated. And so now the issue for all employers is who's working at home and who's not. And, each employer makes their own decision and works it out on their own. It has been a wonderful boon for a lot of people because they're able to work from home, whereas they might not have been before. So which is great. The only issue that some people with disabilities run into is when there's a uniform order that everybody has to be in the office, and employers forget about the requirement of the law to provide people with disabilities a reasonable accommodation. And especially when they've negotiated a reasonable accommodation of working at home before COVID or any of this happened. And then they come and all of a sudden say everybody has to be in a workplace. And even the federal government is doing that in some branches of the government because they really wanted people back in those federal buildings again, which I understand. But you can't forget about the civil rights law and that employers, case by case basis, make accommodations for people with disabilities. It also doesn't mean you have to allow all people with disabilities to work from home. It's a case by case basis, an equal evaluation, individual evaluation, excuse me.
And it is the individual. But the great
Yes.
thing is that you are out there with resources to help people. You're there to help, as I
Absolutely.
said, employers, employees. You have programming that is available. When we go to your website, adainfo.org, that's adainfo.org, what do we find there?
Well, the number one thing is a link to our information about our conference, which is coming up, as you said, October 15th through 17th in the historic Hotel DuPont in Wilmington, Delaware. And our theme this year is inclusive hospitality and tourism. So any place that wants to welcome people with disabilities, this is your one-stop shop for learning everything you need to know about accessibility for all people with disabilities. And we're going to be right there in Wilmington, Delaware. We're so excited about that. This is a billion-dollar industry that a lot of businesses and hospitality venues are not taking advantage of. And they don't know what they don't know, Laura. That's the problem. They might be familiar with the ADA, but it just means I got to make my doors wide enough for a wheelchair to get through, and they think that's it. No, you also have to make your goods and services accessible to people with disabilities. So what does that mean, and how do we do it? And so we're excited to have one place where you can go to get all the answers and develop relationships with local people. And the tourism department in the state of Delaware is going to be there as one of our sponsors, to help, make your business successful and help take advantage of this of all the people who want to come to wherever you are to take advantage of your services and enjoy whatever you have to offer. You can also find resources related to the ADA. We have webinars that were our latest webinars are up on our website. If you click on trainings, you'll find we happen to have two webinars coming up, one September 25th and one on October 2nd, for really aimed at small businesses that teach you how to make your business accessible to people with disabilities. So one's called a welcoming storefront, making your business more accessible for customers with disabilities. The other one is the virtual storefront, which all talks about website accessibility for people with disabilities. And the great thing is if it's after September 25th or October 2nd when you're hearing this, you can go to our website and click on trainings and you'll find the archived version so you can still listen to it at your leisure.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that back to the website because all of this is geared towards there's money out there and there's
Yes.
money to pay people to do a job and there's money for people to spend on your properties, in your stores, using your services. And it's all a matter of tapping into it and knowing how to.
Right. And that's exactly right. You said it so much more articulately than I could.
But that is what the ADA is all about, though. It's spreading that money around and making sure that everybody has equal access to it. And that could be maybe you're a tenant that you are losing out on dollars that you could be renting for property. Or it could be someone who needs an apartment and doesn't realize what rights they have.
Well,
Employers.
and yeah, the other thing, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the other thing is that, you know, first of all, just FYI, there's the Fair Housing Act, which covers living situations, but I think knowing businesses knowing that it's out there, family members have people with disabilities as part of their family. We all know people with disabilities and we want to go together. So we're talking about accessing an industry where people with and without disabilities. I just wanted to include that inclusivity there.
You know, maybe now is a time to remind us again how many people are affected by disability, which then multiply it out towards the family members.
Yeah, exactly. It's one in four people, according for the, to the Centers for Disease Control and the Census Bureau. One in four people have a disability. And then out of those people, one third of the one in four have more than one disability. And then they all have family members who want to travel with them. But again, not only do you want to make your business accessible to people with disabilities, you want to publicize the fact that it is so people know in advance and will be more likely to come to your venue as opposed to the other business that isn't publicizing that information.
I don't know if it's because I work so closely with our own websites here that I'm aware that we are making changes in them. And do you want to talk a little bit about website accessibility? Because you mentioned it in talking about your upcoming webinar. So do you want to talk a little bit about the changes that we're seeing on websites?
Well, essentially, the changes are so that people who use screen readers to access information can get that information. And sometimes, depending on the font size you use and how you use pictures and the design of website, screen readers can't pick up that information. It's things as simple as websites when you're listing the entire website out instead of linking it to the name of the website, like the ADA conference website. And so the screen reader would pick up on that. So, and then font size and contrast and colors for people with low vision to be able to see. There's so many little things to consider that once you know that it's like, oh, well, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I get it. But and you can go to like our website and other disability organizations' website and look and see what accessibility looks like. And you'll see it doesn't look that different at all, but there are little differences that you might not be aware of, and that's why we have these educational opportunities.
If who should be reaching out to you?
Anybody who has a website, honestly, and it open to the public that they want the public to go to, which is, I think, is most people who have a website.
And again, that webinar is, I believe, on the have to look
That's
at
the
my
one on
notes.
October 2nd.
October 2nd. And again, if you're hearing this after that date, or if you're hearing this by podcast, always go to adainfo.org, and you'll be able to find the archives of their webinars and the informational materials that they have there. But now, who should be considering, you know, visiting your site to begin with? I mean, who needs the ADA?
Well, I think, I would say specifically employers who want to hire qualified people, which are most employers, people with disabilities who want to know about their rights under the law, state and local government who have to make their services accessible to people with disabilities. And what does this mean? Because state and local government obviously offer a whole plethora of services to all of us, and small businesses, hotels, certainly the entire hospitality and tourism industry, if they want to attract people with disabilities to come to their spot. And I don't know, I don't think I mentioned, Laura, our pre-conference on the 15th is a trip to Winterthur, which has done an amazing job of integrating accessibility into the way they do business. And we have a pre-conference event on the 15th there where we'll talk about how they have seamlessly included accessibility into the way they provide services. So we're really excited about that. So there's a large group of people who, and family members of people with disabilities who want to know how the ADA applies to their family members, people who think they might have a disability but are not really sure. All those people, 1-800-949-4ADA.
So you've got coming up October 15th and 17th at, and this is at the Hotel DuPont, correct?
Yes, Hotel DuPont. The conference is the 16th and 17th, and our pre-conference is the 15th. And registration, all the information you need, you just go to adainfo.org and click on the front page there. You'll see the conference information.
And you know, you might think that you know it already. Maybe you work a bus transportation and you think you understand this inside and out. There's something always new to learn. And or maybe you're a tour guide, maybe you are a hotel, a restaurant. We keep forgetting about
Exactly.
just how far travel and tourism extends into the economic picture of our cities, you know.
Well, and recreation providers. So that's state and local governments too that are providing recreation venues as well. They're included. We want to see them too. We're going to have a track wheelchair in there that can go on trails in the forest in there. It's going to be great.
And again, it's open, it's travel and tourism, but it's inclusive hospitality and tourism, with the opening day, a tour of Winterthur to see how they do it on October 15th. And then 16th and 17th, you've got the conference itself at the Hotel DuPont in Wilmington, Delaware. Parting words?
You don't know what you don't know. And it's always good to get more information. So come to our website, adainfo.org. There is something for everybody.
You heard her. For more information, go to their website, adainfo.org. And that's where you will also find archives of their webinars, information for you with a disability, for family members, employers, employees. Everybody can find information there, adainfo.org. And my guest today, it's Executive Director for the Mid-Atlantic ADA Center, Anne Duchamp. Thank you for being on today.
Laura, thank you so much for having me.
And again, for more information, adainfo.org. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.